And welcome to another episode of Through the Web, where we talk all things tech, business, and internet. And I'm Dagogo.
I'm Tosif.
And I'm Brayden.
And this week we're going to go straight into a scary fast event.
Okay.
That's what it's called by Apple. By the time this episode comes out, the Apple event would have happened. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, maybe just let's talk about a week. How's your week, Dagogo?
Nothing too crazy to report about.
Nothing scary, nothing fast.
Nothing scary or fast, unfortunately.
I mean, it is Halloween week.
Yeah.
Did you get much into...
I did go to a Halloween party, as a pirate.
You grew up in
Australia.
Yes. Brayden, you grew up in Australia as well, right?
Yeah.
I moved when I was in my, teens. So when you were younger, was Halloween ever a thing in Australia? Like, as we see in movies for the US, kind of?
In my experience, not that big. Like, yes, you would have kids that would trick-or-treat, but it wasn't huge.
Because the most Halloween things that I see in Australia is basically costume parties where you could just get drunk.
That's
about it.
There's not much of the pumpkin carving or any of that stuff.
So. Yeah, like, but you know, when you go to the grocery stores in Australia, you do see a lot of the, promotional stuff around pumpkins, which I was surprised to see. Like, I don't know if schools do it or if there's, like...
I don't know. It's been a while. Maybe it's changed.
Maybe it's changed.
Yeah.
Nothing from you, Brayden, as well, like, in terms of Halloween?
No, not really. I mean, again, a few times when we were younger, like high school, start of high school.
Yeah.
But... No, like, I always wish it was bigger. Like, it's right before Christmas, but I noticed that all the Christmas decorations comes out all over the place before Halloween's even over.
Yes.
I feel like if it was bigger here, it'd be pretty cool. But, I went to a Halloween party, but it was...
Yeah, just very basic. Yeah. All right, well, we can do maybe just wear a costume for the next ones. Through the web, I don't know. No? Should have done it for today. But look, we'll go straight into the Apple event, which is supposed to be sometime... on the October 30th, I think it's at 5 p.m. Pacific time, and the event will be focused on the Mac. And I guess given the scary fast tagline that it's coming up with, what do you think it's going to be about?
Well, there's only one obvious suggestion, unless there's some crazy curveball that Apple throws. But I think it's going to be the M3 chip. Rumors are saying this time around they're going to do the M3 Pro and Max first, before going to the regular M3 chip, lower grade chip. So there's a lot riding on this, and I don't know if we should go into why that is, but essentially there's some competition in the nipping on the heels of Apple, so that they I guess need to show their prowess once again. Because the M2, according to rumors, was a bit of a stopgap. So they were supposed to be doing the 3-nanometer process in terms of like transistor size versus 5-nanometer in the previous chip, the M1, but they stayed with the same process and only, I think, I don't know if they increased the core count or the actual clock speed, but it wasn't really that much of a shift. Whereas this time, this is like the real deal now, the next real generation that Apple's going to unveil. So it'll be, I'm eager to see what it is. There's also rumors of a $700 MacBook. So like, an Air that's like a 12-inch or a 13-inch that's like $700. So it's going to be competing with the Chromebooks, the higher-end Chromebooks. So that's, if that comes to fruition, that will be extremely interesting. Because apparently Apple's sales year-on-year, like were 40, like in terms of MacBooks, are like 40% down.
40%?
Yeah, so they had a massive drop.
Would that be the highest in a while? It sounds like quite...
So it's drastic, but the thing was 2022, I think... or early 2022, that was the peak of their sales. Mm. So I guess it's coming down from a massive boost.
Right.
So that's got something to do with it, also the economy, etc. Yeah. But regardless, that's a terrible number because I think they even halted production of the M2 chips because there weren't enough Macs being sold. So I think that there needs to be a bit of a rethink there. Overall, I'm very excited to see what Apple comes up with.
Well, you, Brayden, what are your predictions for?
Well, I mean, I see them doing a M3. I mean, I can't think of anything else scary fast. It's just after the Qualcomm event. Like, it makes sense. But I was thinking, like, it would be, seeing as they're like all across the whole professional workflow, like, I wonder why they haven't tapped into like a camera, like an actual professional grade thing, considering they do like the premium side of everything. Like, I was thinking it'd be cool if they did, like, they followed what, like, Hasselblad or like those high-end premium cameras did, where they're, it's like internal storage, it's specifically made for something, and you'd think with their ecosystem, like, that's something that would be pretty cool if they, like, got it right. And with all the push they've been doing for their phone cameras recently, now they got Log, they got ProRes internally, they got all this stuff, like, that might be cool to see in the future. I don't know if that's an interesting take
because more and more Apple, and I guess most of the tech world, is gearing towards the individuals being creators and, of course, democratizing the entire process where everything's in the palm of your hands, very quick, easy, shoot everything at a very high quality, post it up, right? So it does make sense from that angle that they may be doing, I mean, not maybe doing it, but they could be potentially doing it. But I can't think of any other brand that would have come up with a professional grade camera who are in that space. Like, I can't imagine a Google camera, for example. Yeah. Unless,
I think the reason, just in my opinion, why Apple doesn't get into the camera space would be because they're a computing company. It's everything they do is to do with computing in one way or another. Like, their name used to be Apple Computer, and then you dropped it after the iPhone. But they're still, that's still in their DNA. So a camera would be something that would be a little left field. I think it makes sense, but I just don't feel Apple would do something like that.
Right. The only other company that I could think is perhaps Samsung-ish, but then they're not really in... I mean, it does seem like all the biggest mobile phone players aren't specifically into mobile phones only. Like, they've... or smartphones, I guess. Because if you look at, okay, what are the three biggest names right now? Still Apple, Samsung, and perhaps Google's catching up a little bit. Who else? Maybe
OnePlus.
OnePlus.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think maybe cameras would be like a low sales volume because smartphones, everyone needs one. And I think it makes more sense to just have the cameras as good as possible on smartphones. So it's good enough for 70% of the average person. And then if you really want to go that extra step, you go and buy a DSLR. But to actually have the R&D and come up with a whole product category, I think would...
I think they've always looked at reducing the number of devices potentially that does other things rather than, you know, increasing that. So, yeah, it'll be... I don't think they're going to go that route, unfortunately, Braden, but yeah.
But Braden, I think you should write a letter to Tim Cook. Let him know.
Well, I have to.
But you mentioned something about competition.
Ah, yes. Now, so where was I? I was on the couch just chilling last week. And then I think it was CNET. They released you know how sometimes they do those compilation videos, like this keynote speech in 14 minutes highlight. And it was like uploaded like 50 minutes ago. Mm. And it was like Qualcomm. And I was like, Qualcomm, I haven't really heard what they're doing recently. Let me click on it. And then as soon as it started, my eyes were bulging out of my head and my jaw was on the floor because some of these numbers that they were talking about. So for context, Qualcomm had a keynote and they were talking about two chips in particular. One was their desktop top slash laptop class chip, ARM-based, which is the same kind of architecture that Macs use. Mm-hmm. So for full context, on the Windows side of things, you've got x86, which is, you know, from the 80s, quite bloated, and it's always just been improved over the years, but they run much more complicated instructions for the CPU to actually execute. So essentially, they're more flexible. You can do absolutely anything on them, but they're a bit bloated compared to the ARM stuff, which has been around for a while, also the 80s, but it's always been, the focus has been low power, essentially, so that they've ended up in phones first. Then when Apple Silicon came out, they managed to make that transition to be able to power a full computer and still be efficient. So that's where we are now. So on the ARM side of things, the main player is Apple, obviously with the Apple Silicon. Mm-hmm. And then Qualcomm is on the other side. They power all Android phones and they haven't really entered the laptop space. But with this announcement, the numbers that they're saying is crazy. So it's like they have the very best... There's a chart that they showed in this presentation, and it shows it beating Apple's M2 chip, which is obviously a massive feat, and it's doing it with 30% less power. Like, it can be at the max speed of the Apple chip with 30% less power use. And these kinds of numbers, not in a million years, but I was expecting Qualcomm to catch up in this way. So I have some grains of salt, like perhaps they have it in some way where most of the time when you're using it, it's nowhere near as fast, but just for a freak split second, it boosts to max power and is able to outperform. But who knows? Maybe it's just better overall. We just don't know yet. We have to see the full figures. So that's on the desktop side. And then on the actually, another chart they showed was it outperforming in single thread performance, the best Intel chip on the market now. Mm-hmm. And again, that's like crazy. Like people were clapping and cheering and they just were shocked at what was going on. And so was I, because Qualcomm has been trying to catch up since they became popular in smartphones, and we haven't seen competition that close. But now that they've overtaken Apple, I think this is basically the start of a new era, essentially. I did say it when I was talking about the how Apple just changed the industry. That's the video I titled it when Apple released their M1 chip, mm-hmm. because that was a new start to something. And I knew if Apple was going to do it, everyone was going to follow. And I think we're starting to see the beginnings of that. Mm-hmm. And I think this is just the way it's going to go. Because if you've got, why would you have something that takes like, I don't know, 60 watts or 70 watts of power versus something that takes 15 to 20 and is faster? It's like, who's, you know, the competition, it's not really there. So, I just thought it was crazy. But what do you think?
I don't have a lot of knowledge in that space in terms of the computing mechanics and how it can make things more efficient. But it does sound like, obviously, you know, when I study a little bit into the M1 and M2 releases, it was, as you said, it was industry changing, like revolutionary thing that to the point from a consumer perspective, it has made me question, you know, the loyalty that I've had to Windows for such a long time. Mm. And even now, like I think of changing up to an Apple specific computer, right? But I guess if this now comes out and now it can do this similar kind of output on a regular desktop that's not by Apple, then it'll change the tide again, or at least keep the thing same. And I guess that's the biggest turning point for non-Apple market.
I think the people that should, well, I guess the company that should be the most worried is Intel. I think that's where it should go. So Intel did do an unveiling. I have to dig into it because I'm going to be doing a video on all of this. But apparently they're using some new architecture where it has some components of, well, they're mixing different nanometer sizes in their chips, but they're linking them together with this like 3D transistor layer. So essentially, you know how Apple has that fusion technology where you can put two chips together. Yeah. They're doing the same thing, but with multiple chips. So it doesn't like lose any energy when like communicating with each other. So apparently the performance is pretty good and the power consumption has gone down a lot. So try and find the name of that. I think it's just their 14th gen laptop chips that they're doing that in. But so I think this is the best time to be a consumer, because I believe in the next 2 to 3 years when all these chips start coming on the market, mm-hmm. we'll start seeing laptops that are thin, light, affordable, but just have crazy amounts of power. I think the graphics compared to desktops will lag for a while, but still, I think we're going to have some great value soon. So what do you think, Braden?
Yeah, hopefully it's a competitor. I mean, I don't know if you saw that they've got a system, what's it called? It's a cross-platform thing now where they're trying to basically interlink any Qualcomm device. So there's like anything running a Qualcomm phone chip or if it's a Windows computer, and they're trying to basically give it access across the whole platform, so you can do what Apple does, where you can transfer files across your phone to your computer. And so they're trying to fill that gap. So, and I think currently Microsoft, Google, Dell, Lenovo, Honor, and Oppo are all part of that program.
And that actually is great. Like that kind of cross-compatibility is something that only Apple could do for the longest time. But I also do feel that there's extra layers of, I guess, resistance or friction when you have Windows devices. It just seems like because the software manufacturer isn't making the hardware, there could still be quite a few differences where weird things could happen. But maybe I'm just talking from old experience of the days of old when it was all x86. But
yeah, I guess it depends how they integrate it, I think. Like if there's like a step you have to take in order to connect it, like whereas Apple's pretty seamless. Like normally if your phone's next to your computer, it knows it's there. So I think it just depends how that connection happens. If you have to go through a number of steps to get it to connect before you can transfer files and all that, I don't think it'll be competitive. But I think if they do bridge that gap and, you know, I guess the other limitation is that it has to be Qualcomm at this stage. So if, you know, you're running an Intel chip, it probably won't work. And everything is still Intel predominantly or AMD. So I think until they open it up to those manufacturers as well, I don't think it'll work, at least not right away.
But what did you think of these figures when they were showing them?
It's pretty wild. I mean, again, like I'm curious to see it like actually next to an M2, like sustained long term performance. And I know they did the single core thing, but that's always like it has more single cores. Like it depends how it's.
Oh, I think it's standardized, so per single core. Like if you just.
Oh right. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I guess once it comes out and we get those proper comparisons, that'll be kind of the. You know, whether it's worth it or not. I know they did an example with DaVinci Resolve on stage.
Okay.
And apparently it ran better than most Windows laptops.
Right.
Running the same
right
system software. So, yeah, it could be good.
It's crazy because you have this thing where it's like Apple is far ahead, then Qualcomm comes along, and then Apple maybe tomorrow overtakes them again. So, like, this is what you want to see, you know.
Yeah.
Companies going head-to-head and trying to get the best performance. Because for the longest time before this Mac transition, Intel was just like, eh, whatever, we don't have to do anything. They just kept, like, what was it, the 12th Gen plus, or whatever it was. Like, they just kept making the same chip over and over again. And people were just getting annoyed because it was just like, you know, what's going on here? You're using the process from, like, 5 years ago. So, yeah, I think this is good, ultimately.
How much of that do you think will filter through to Snapdragon for the smartphone usage?
From
Qualcomm to.
So this event, what I just talked about was the Elite X. So that's their desktop class, but they also unveiled their mobile chip, which is the Gen 3. So they actually, for the first time, unveiled a phone running a Gen 3 that you could buy soon. Like it's already manufactured. I think it's by Oppo or was it OnePlus? One of the two. So it exists now. And I think the early benchmarks are saying that it outperforms Apple's A17 in some areas, but is a little behind in others. But the gap is quite narrow now. So I think in smartphones, we're going to see a big bump. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I do know that Snapdragon is going to sponsor Man United's jersey next season.
Okay.
So that's my Halloween costume sorted to dress up as a clown next season because we're just terrible right now. So
maybe they'll regret that decision. But
the only marker where it's red downwards for Snapdragon is that. But moving on to some other news, and it's mostly to do with, I guess, the one only Mr. Elon Musk's X.
Yes.
So, Brendan, do you have an update for us, apparently, from the world of X?
Yeah, so Elon wants X to be the center of the financial world. He wants it to do everything that you do with money. So he expects the features to roll out by the end of 2024. He told X employees during their all-hands call on Thursday, saying that people will be surprised with just how powerful it is. He quotes, when I say payments, I actually mean someone's entire financial life. According to audio of the meeting obtained by The Verge, if it involves money, it'll be on our platform. Money or securities or whatever. So it's not just like $20 to my friend I'm talking about. Like, you won't need a bank. That's his quote.
The main thing for most people, just looking at how the platform has been run, it's gone completely smoothly. There's been no controversies. You have to 100% trust in putting all of your money in such a platform. I think that's what all of us are thinking about.
It's been a year since he took over, and I've got some numbers in front of me. And since that 1 year, X monthly users are down by 15%, and revenue has slumped by 54%.
So was that 1.5 and 5.4? 15 and 54, did you say?
1.5 and 5.4, yeah, yes. Okay. And again, there's obviously plenty of different opinions as to what you think about X. I don't think my usage has gone down in terms of, I guess, a personal lurker, which I do mostly on X. I don't post as much. But I am seeing like certain things are a little bit, I don't want to say broken, but it just it doesn't seem right in a lot of ways since the takeover. Has that, I guess, changed the way I view the platform a little bit? But it hasn't stopped me from using it as much as I did in the past. So, yeah, again, this is a completely personal anecdote. What about you in terms of...
In terms of my usage?
Usage, you know, in terms of consuming, writing...
I think it's, I'd never post, but I think in terms of usage, it's roughly about the same. Although I did notice for some reason, Bloomberg's been flooding my feed. Like I'll have like 5 Bloomberg posts in a row and then something else and then another 5. I don't know what.
Things like that. I mean, is it just feels like it's broken. Like it's broken is the right way to say it because it's like, why? And like sometimes what I see is I actually run out of content. So I'll keep seeing this, like say I'll see 15 posts. And then after the 16th will be the first post that I would have seen, and it's the 15th, like, and it'll be the same 15 posts again. Okay. And I don't know if it's a device issue or not, but yeah, like, and also I would say the phone and the PC works differently in terms of the types of news that I get and whatnot. So, it does, and I can't say, you know, that Facebook or Instagram are perfect. Or, you know, those are the other two apps that I'd use for, you know, social media. But yeah, it just seems like X hasn't really been that great since the takeover in some cases, but in other cases, you know, obviously the community notes in a lot of cases were good. And I think we've touched on all that, but going back to the idea of it being a financial app, essentially it wants to be your bank. What's your thought on that?
Well, I think in any kind of financial institution, especially a bank, the number one commodity and factor in whether it's going to work or not is trust. And you know, whether or not the security is good, I think the branding of Elon Musk being so closely tied to Twitter, there'll be a lot of people that say, if I put my savings in here, what could, like, something could go wrong? Like, because there's just been so many haphazard changes. It's just uncertainty and you're not just, I'm just talking about the average person here. You're just not so sure. So although in theory, and it might seem like a good idea because it's worked so well in China with the WeChat. Is it WeChat that you can do everything on? I think, in practice it can work quite well. But I think for largely an American audience and a Western audience, the challenge of making people use it in that way is one thing. But then also overcoming the doubts that some people may have is another thing. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I'm not it's probably going to work, but it's not going to be a huge... You know, everyone's not going to flock to it, I don't think.
It's also interesting because if you look at Elon Musk's track record, right? Obviously, you know, his I guess, quote-unquote, big break was through PayPal in a lot of ways, right? And that is a financial-based app. I know it's not a bank per se, but obviously it's a financial product. And it's one of the most successful products today, even till this day. You know, so many people use it, right? So if you look at that, then you might think that, okay, you know, there's some positive things to it. And maybe if you take X out of the equation and maybe a few of these other side projects like, you know, the boring tunnel and whatnot, you look at, okay, Tesla, mostly a pretty good, robust company-ish, ups and downs here and there. But then if you look at, of course, SpaceX, again, it's doing good things. So in terms of track record, it does feel, and Starlink as well, these are the things you feel like, okay, there's some... It's not going to be hopefully all crazy. I think it's his presence with X and his constant tweeting that make it seem so untrustworthy.
But that's kind of what I meant. Like, you know, the technology may work. It doesn't matter if it's good or not. It's just the perception.
But then again, you'll have like this huge core percentage of people who trust him no matter what. But I don't know if that'll be enough of a number for him to justify creating like essentially a bank, as he calls it. But...
And we'll see what happens to regulation as well. Like if there's any tokens or anything involved, like, you know, Facebook tried to do it with the Libra coin and then the federal government was like, no, you don't do that. So, you know, it's going to be a hard thing when you start talking about money, I think.
And with the Dogecoin fiasco that we saw.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's,
yeah,
there's
so I don't know. You might have to convert your money to Dogecoin, to send money like $20 to your friend. I don't know. But he did say, what was it, Britain? 2024, I think?
Into 2024.
2024. So that's what, a year from now? Not scary and fast. Mm. Scary, not fast enough, I guess. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things pan out there. Moving on to the next topic. This is an interesting one. So there's this company called Humane. You know, we kind of, you know, talked about it, I guess, off the screen every now and then over the years about what the company's about. But for those who don't know, they claim themselves to be a platform that creates and sells, you know, consumer hardware, software, and services that feel familiar, natural, and humane. You know, those typical corporate lingo. But they are quite mysterious in the sense that they've been working on these very interesting products over the last few years. And even when they were created, there was like these leaks about, you know, what the company was going to be. So I think they're based in New York as well.
Founded by two ex-Apple engineers that worked on the iPhone, was it?
I have to confirm that, but I can quickly... I think one of them is Imran Chowdhury.
Yes.
Is one of
his name? Yeah, I know he definitely worked on that.
And this another woman, I forgot her name. But yeah, they co-founded the company. The reason why I bring this up is because they potentially have a new product launch in the early weeks of November. And it's essentially this mysterious device. They actually had a partnership with a runway, like a fashion brand for a runway in Paris, I think, where they just wear this. It's almost like a AirPods case. Sorry, Ben, you wanted to?
Yeah, no, I was just confirming that it was the other two ex-Apple.
So they're ex-Apples, okay, so that's confirmed. Okay. But yeah, it looks like almost like an AirPod case that you can just wear or just have it on you kind of thing. And essentially, in the presentation that that was done by Imran, I think earlier this year, it could accept phone calls. It could get information about where to buy a gift. It could translate a sentence when that is spoken in an AI-made version of his voice in French, and also it would give its opinion on whether you can eat a chocolate bar or not. And so basically, it's almost like an AI companion app that is also a hardware device that can take phone calls and do other things. And the way they're putting it is it's a standalone device, a phone, contextual computer, and software platform all in one, built specifically for the use of AI. That's how they're positioning it. And it could go up to as much as $1,000 and may also require a monthly subscription for certain data usage. So yeah, it's very interesting product. It's like a new gadget. It's also wearable. It's also got this projector thing. Because some of the things I saw, you know, it could like highlight on your hand. So I don't know if it'll, you know, you could just use your palm of your hand to, you know, use it as a UI. Mm-hmm. But that's the new product that's apparently going to come out in the next couple of weeks. So you might hear more about that soon.
I think the important thing to No, I guess it's just like expectations. It's just we have to adjust them. It sounds cool, but so did Google Glass, you know. And it's just one of those things where it's like all the features here, but in practice, it just really didn't quite make it. So it's interesting, but it's really hard to say what it's going to be until people start using it and they tell their experiences and what the shortcomings are and what was surprising, and then I guess you can make a better judgment. But as for now, it's kind of just a lot of marketing. But obviously, great track record. Both of these, well, I know Imran especially was quite instrumental in the iPhone, but that, you know, you don't get much better caliber than that. So we'll see.
What about usability? Do you think, like, just going forward, say something like this comes along, I won't say it'll gain mass adoption just yet, but say it can replace your phone. It would be like a standalone device that can do a lot of work.
Think about it. Like, I guess it can replace your phone for utilitarian tasks, but not so much entertainment, which I think a lot of people would like. So people probably will be having this and a phone. And I don't know, does that defeat the purpose? I'm not sure. Because, of what I've seen, yes, it does have a projector screen, but you can't really watch anything on there. Social media isn't really going to work. A lot of people like to take photos. Like, it's just it's half a phone in a way, and it's just that half maybe easier because you can just talk and everything's audio instead of navigating, but it's missing a lot. So I don't know if you can really, I don't know how well that will fly with people.
So again, I guess it'll be for a very niche kind of market, not necessarily for mass adoption, almost like the light phone, for example. You know, like you just want to, most people have a light phone and a proper phone. Again, for those who don't know light phone, maybe look up the podcast episode we did with the co-founder. Very interesting project. But yeah, for those who are using light phones, they also have an actual smartphone. They just don't choose to take the smartphone with them in certain days of the week or in certain scenarios. So maybe this could be something like that. Very, very niche audience. Again, I may not necessarily use it, but maybe there could be...
Maybe there's like excellent use cases that we just can't think of because we're not just in that position.
Foldable phones. Like, I don't see that.
Well, apparently you're in the minority.
Yeah, like the comments in the last episode is like, yeah, it's for me. So it's interesting to see. I mean, obviously, for me, it wasn't... Like, I understand just because I don't like it doesn't mean that there's not a market for it. But in the same case, it's also... It's like when you're building a device, like these days, unless you're a big company, it's so hard to reach a sizable kind of like a profitable business targeting a niche audience, unless it's like a luxury product or something that just justifies, you know, the whole thing. So again, in my head, I'm trying to make out in terms of, okay, there is a market for pretty much everything these days, but is how it big is enough? It, exactly. Is it big enough? And it's the same thing with this product, I guess, just going forward. But yeah, interesting times. I'm thinking of a segue for the next one. Will it be able to take photos?
I was going to say, speaking about premium products.
Okay. There you go. Okay, nice one.
The Leica's new camera. So the M11 is a rangefinder. It's needlessly expensive. It's normally about $10,000 USD, and it's a little less. It's just a rangefinder. There's no video. It's photos only. But this new version, the P version, has come out with Adobe's content credentials. So it's built into the camera, and it's an option on or off thing. And when it's on, it'll like basically imprint every RAW file or JPEG with content credentials. So it lists the camera, all the information, and it's in a read-only file, so it can't be changed or anything. And across every app that's a part of the program, it can be viewed. So it basically adds a layer of security and background information. So,
okay. So I'm a little, still a bit confused. So this, on two things. So this range finder thing, what makes that so desirable to have?
It doesn't really. It's a luxury thing. So if you're a photographer, a lot of, like the old school rangefinder cameras were just kind of sought after.
Okay.
And now that film's coming back, people want in, and there's only like Fujifilm does a couple of rangefinder style cameras. So it's an aesthetic. It doesn't do anything better than a normal camera.
So I think the rangefinder is probably not the key component of this news. It's more so the content credentials.
Yeah, and I was going to say, the next question was, are the credentials the selling point?
Yeah.
For this?
So this camera's, I think it's $200 or $300 more than the standard one. I think it adds one or two slight feature bumps, but the main thing is this content credentials.
And it's verified through Adobe's open source content authenticity initiative. Okay. So essentially from what I can see here is that there's going to be a thing called Adobe Verified, I think. It's like it's going to be Adobe's verification page, and the images there, you can basically any camera that has that component, you'll be able to cross-check from the Adobe's central hub to see if the image was taken from that specific camera or not. And the idea of it is basically to see if a bad actor messes with the original photo or not. So essentially, what we thought of blockchain in a lot of ways to do in terms of authenticating data or pieces of content. And this is something I think we spoke about.
Like when the whole AI thing was
exactly. Like how do you make sure that something is authentic?
Yeah.
And I guess this could be somewhat of the first step towards that.
Interesting, but from the point of view of the consumer of this Leica camera, it's not really a benefit to them. Like, obviously, for everyone else, it's a benefit. Mm-hmm. Yes, we know these videos are verified, but for a person deciding between the standard version and a version that has this, paying an extra $200-$300 for it, it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's less of a selling point for the consumer, but more so for the industry and I guess the ethos of how you but then create going forward.
What's stopping smartphone manufacturers? I'm not actually exactly sure how this works. Is it? I don't know if it's a chip.
I don't actually know what it physically is. I think it's just a software.
Yeah, it is. No, it is a chip. So I think that the bigger issue here is the M11P, which is like an internal security chip that generates a signed certificate into the metadata of the image.
Okay.
And that allows the photo to be verified through the open source of Adobe.
Because my next question was, what's stopping every
smartphone
from just doing this?
So, and because they're, I think, working with Adobe, it seems like they are kind of like the central point for authenticating these photos that have, I guess, the partnership with the hardware company, and in this case would be Leica. So I guess this could be the first use case for them. They're trying out on a luxury product because if they go, I guess, for a mass adopted product, I guess testing it out on the wild would be harder. So maybe they've got a smaller sample size where they're kind of fixing the problems live while it's out there. Maybe they'll introduce it to other, you know, cheaper cameras or more accessible
cameras. It makes sense, and I think it's ultimately a good thing because for the consumer, it doesn't change a thing. Like, say in 5 years, every phone has this. Like, no one's going to notice.
Yeah.
You just take your photo. And
I mean, like, for you, Brent, because you are into that world of taking photos and whatnot, like, as Gogo mentioned, I don't think it'll make much of a difference for you, right, in terms of actually taking the photo. Like, would you want that?
Yes and no. Like, it won't make a difference in your photography, obviously, but depending on who you are, like, a lot of the people buying these super high-end cameras roll in very high-end photography. The biggest thing for it is just, it's your signature ingrained in that. It knows who took it, it knows what camera it was on. It's harder to take that away, which is one of the biggest issues with being in the creative side of things, especially in photography right now, is how easy it is to manipulate someone else's photo. One of the big plot holes in this is that you could still screenshot the image and then change the data, right? This is one of the issues. Yeah. So I think Adobe are kind of finding ways around this, but it's for baking it in. So if you're a pro and you're out there shooting crazy types of photography like wildlife or sports or anything that's like, it's like, it's a hard thing to do. This is a really cool thing. So I think Nikon, I'm pretty sure they're putting the same thing in the new Z9, which is a flagship camera. And that's a really popular camera for things like, or it will be for things like sports and wildlife and all those high-end types of photography. I find it weird that Leica's doing this first because this camera is not going to go, you're not going to go shoot anything like that with this. It's a hobby camera that's crazy expensive.
Which is where I think maybe they're just using it as a testing ground. But I was just going to say, the amount of times I've seen plagiarism or like people taking someone else's photo and sending it through for photography competitions and have won is insane.
Wow.
Like, it's a very common story where somebody random or like an amateur photographer will just simply take one from somebody's website, like a big photographer. Doesn't even have to be a big photographer. Maybe like a very seasoned photographer who's just, you know, showcasing their work online. They'll take that photo, enter it into a competition, and actually win the competition. Wow. And years later, people will find out, oh, that photo was actually taken from somewhere else. So I guess this makes sense then, like, why, I guess it might hit both sides. One is, you know, the small sample size, but also for higher-end cameras would mean that a lot of the photographers would want their signatures embedded in the metadata.
It's you're talking about, Braden, how like it'll be easy to just screenshot and take the photo. I'm sure maybe in the future it will become like this. I don't know if we're going towards the whole argument of like we can't do what we want with our own software. But I know on Android phones anyway, like there's some websites you can't screenshot. It doesn't let you. It says cannot screenshot due to security permissions or whatever. So like if there was system-wide, you know, on Mac OS and Windows, where if a computer comes across and it knows it's looking at displaying like a image with this metadata, you just can't screenshot it. Like that could be something as well.
Oh yeah, I think it's going to be very much about which brands adopt it as part of their software. So I think all the Adobe stuff, obviously. Yeah, so anything saved or manipulated in any way and then output through that software has the updated tag on it. So, and because it's read-only, you just have a full history of where this file's been. So, yeah, I would say that if Apple's photo viewing apps, the same with Windows and all that, if all of those apps integrate that, then I can't see why they couldn't implement a no screenshotting tool or something to kind of block third-party apps. But then again, someone always finds a way around it.
Yeah, so. It's true. But I guess it's like the laziest people will be like, that's too hard. So, you
know. Yeah.
But yeah, that's very interesting.
I think we're towards the end of the episode. Is there anything else you want to bring up before we...
Okay. So you know there's this company called Meta, right? Ever heard of them?
Sounds familiar.
Actually, I've kind of talked to you a bit about this, so I'm going to ask Brayden. How would you feel if Meta, Zuckerberg, could read your mind?
Horrified.
Well, turns out October 18th this year, Meta Labs, their scientists, have figured out just how to do that. Literally, non-invasive brainwave reading through MEG technology, so it's kind of like a shoot-off of EEG. They can literally have a participant look at a screen, say it's like imagery of a bird flapping or flying or whatever. It reads the brain waves, and from those brain waves only, it knows what this person is looking at and can reconstruct the image using AI. So it literally can, and it does it thousands of times a second. So it can literally, yeah, from what you're looking at, it understands it through just your brain waves and can reconstruct the image of what your eyes are seeing.
Brayden's mind just blowing up.
I hate that. I know. So much.
And the thing is, like, while I was writing this script, I was like, wait a second. The Meta glasses, like the Ray-Ban ones. And I was like, what? Even just the headset, the Meta Quest Pro as well. It's like, it would be so easy for them to just sneakily put some little electrodes in there. And then essentially, they could know what you're thinking because it can reconstruct words as well, like your thoughts in terms of words. So it can know what you're looking at, what you're thinking, and then just shove ads down your throat exactly what you'd want. And
jokes on them. I've got ADHD.
So this guy, we can't read it.
I can't read my mind. It's like 10 different ads just coming up. Every few seconds.
But yeah, like when I had that realization as I was writing the script, I was like, oh no, I was like, this is crazy. So obviously in the paper, they were talking about how this will be good for people with certain disabilities and it could help in exploding open the field of research within neuroscience and all of this. But that's one side, great, but it's so, so easy for this to be manipulated.
It's like lesser of the two evils. Like if we have accepted that the future of tech will require us to just use our brain signals to do tasks, would you rather put an invasive chip in your head, or would you just wear a glass?
Why is there a choice?
If we have accepted that,
but why do we have to accept that?
No, we don't. So, but these are big corporations we're talking about, and I can tell you, most people will eventually end up being okay with stuff like this because nothing in the world beats convenience for most people in this world.
So I started off this video with the Minority Report, basically just saying, you know, it was a crazy movie because there was a police unit that was deployed for people who were going to commit crimes but hadn't yet. And in that society, people could easily be thinking, this is great because everyone will be secure. Like there's no such thing as crime anymore. But on the other hand, all of our privacy is gone. Like there they had some weird AI beings that I'm just talking about like if it was done through the methods of reading brainwaves. But how far can convenience go? That's the question.
Yeah, I think ultimately that will be the question. Also, many people who've said this can't be done eventually are proven wrong in the world of tech. But in my mind, I feel that something that'll be that seamless that can just read our brain signals to, I guess, show us ads specifically will be a hard thing to achieve in terms of like what I'm thinking right now and immediately it's going to. Because, you know, even we don't understand how we think sometimes, like our conscious and our subconscious. It's a, you know, like we still don't understand how our brains work in a lot of ways. So
but the thing is, Okay, so it wasn't just them. So in the video, there's another research team from the University of Austin, Texas, and they did a similar things, but just with words, and they could get like full. So the thing is, what they were reading may not be exactly the words that were thought about, but the meaning is the same. Mm. So it's like, So you're thinking, I want to eat an apple. It'll be like, how could I put it? Like I need apple or apple in mouth, chew or something like that. So you kind of get the gist of it. Yeah. So it's not perfect, but it's still, we're reading brains, man. It's crazy.
Of course. But then like say, what if I just keep changing? I want to eat apple, orange, banana, apple. And then it's like, you know, like the comment itself, like if I were to give some sort of comment, right? Mm. It needs to have like a definitive final output.
Right.
With brain signals, it's just so easy to change my mind.
Right.
In like, say, if you want something in front of you or something like a computer program comment to be going through, you can just look at it and be like, okay, I want to press yes, no, I don't want.
Yeah,
like,
it's true. That's true.
So things like that, I feel just too perfect. Or how you can, obviously there will be ways in which you can bypass those. I'm thinking really granular, you know, like really deep into, okay, I actually have a device where I can do things with it just by thinking.
Yeah.
What would be like, the difficulties for these companies to get past. These are some of the things.
So that there was a few I discussed in the video, but just as a side, one thing I found really interesting was that in order to get the this is of the Texas University researchers, but in order to get the the accuracy up, they literally used an AI neural network that and the thing is they mirror each other. So like this neural network is self-learning, and they found out that the way it self-learns is the same way that the result is the same way that humans like gather knowledge in like their knowledge tree. So it's like the AI model of the neural network was literally interpreting a brain because they're similar. And it's like, dude, what are we doing? This is crazy. So I don't know. From a strictly technological, scientific, engineering point of view, it was so fascinating, but also terrifying. It's just
I think when you told me, because I didn't find out, I found it out through you. So when you were telling me, I was like, wow, that's like just from a technological feat perspective, that is incredible.
Yes,
that is just brilliant. But immediately you go like, I don't really want another human being, let alone Mark Zuckerberg, on my head reading all my thoughts. But then, like I said, you know, I can just quickly deceive him and like start thinking about Elon Musk all the time. It's like, you want to get in my head? I'm not going to talk about Elon Musk.
But look, I think, you know, regardless, if there's any Meta device that comes out with this, Meta stonks are going to go flying, I reckon. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like the potential that they have to make money off of this is going to be...
It's Meta's turning out to be cockroach in terms of hard to get rid of. Because remember how many times people thought they were down and out?
Look, I admit, I was in that bandwagon.
Yeah. And you know, Cold Fusion, I think you made a couple of videos, I think maybe... couple years ago, maybe last
like
year?
Three or four.
Yeah.
Actually, the most recent one was Meta falling 70%.
Exactly.
The stock
price, and that wasn't the only time. Like the amount of times we talked about, like, okay, no way they're going to come back from this. No way they're going to come back. And every single time they somehow have made some, even with the threads, now with Twitter kind of going this other direction, a lot of people are going to think, like, okay, the only alternative app that is easy and popular that does what X or Twitter used to do would be Threads. And again, we can go on and on, talk about some of these products, but this is not, I guess, us seeing necessarily the praises for what they do. Obviously, Meta and Mark Zuckerberg's got terrible track records with so many things, but in terms of purely the company going down and out, they're far from it.
I think Zuckerberg has understood you can't sit still and always adapting. I think he's managed to do that. As much as everyone hates him, like he has to have some credit in that field. And I think at this stage that like with the amount of cash they have on hand and the revenue they're generating, it's almost like they're too big to fail.
Yeah.
Like they just...
I think that they've definitely hit that part where they are too big to fail, especially with so many different product lines, you know, and only more to come. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting few years, I guess.
Yeah. So, is this it?
I guess, but maybe without saying stuff, maybe you can just use your mind to end the podcast. Just
all right. Beep, 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 beep. All right.
It'd be funny if his brain just cuts it off right there. Just end it there.
If you enjoyed this episode, hopefully, you know, we went from Qualcomm chips to mind reading, and that wasn't too much for you, but we'll see you again soon for the next episode. Cheers, guys.